You're listening to HuntertonChamberRadio.com, sponsored by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. Our studios are located in the CenturyLink building at 14 Mine Street, Flemington, New Jersey. The content and views of our hosts do not necessarily reflect the views of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. To contact our station, call 908-782-7115 or email onair@hunterdon-chamber.org. Thank you to our sponsors and underwriters. Please remember to support them and buy Hunterdon, buy local. Visit www.hunterdonchamberradio.com for a complete listing of our programming.
Her at C. Shockley, C-S-H-O-C-K-L-E-Y, at hcvsd.org. To learn more about the adult and continuing education programs, visit hcvsd.org. hcvsd.org. And finally, Lambertville Gallery to host a town and country exhibit on January 16th to February 13th. Staff at NJ Advanced Media reports that the Lambertville Gallery at the Bank of Princeton and the Bank at the Bank of Princeton presents Town and Country, an exhibition of oil paintings by Cindy Rosinger. The show runs from Saturday, January 16th through Saturday, February 13th. A reception will be held from 9 a.m. to 12 on Saturday, January 30th. The show coincides with the Lambertville New Hope Winter Festival and Gallery Crawl. The gallery is located in the heart of Lambertville at 10 Bridge Street in Lambertville. The body of work showcases the beauty of both sides of the river towns and countryside of our locale. Cindy's paintings are created in the traditional New Hope Impressionist style, with rich, warm tones used to emphasize the quality of color and the light to create dramatic skies and bountiful lands. Within this exhibition, one will find renderings of all four seasons from around the Delaware River region. A self-taught oil painter, Cindy began her career as a photo editor and photographer, and eventually transitioned into oil painting after moving to Doylestown, PA in 2001. Rosinger is an award-winning artist whose work has been displayed, collected, and published in numerous publications, galleries, and private collections nationally. Much of my work is influenced by the sense of open space and peace of the pastoral surroundings of my childhood home in Hopewell and the Delaware River region. So see cindy-rosinger.artistwebsites.com for more information. That's right. That winter festival is on its way, and I don't know. It doesn't look like we're going to have much snow for that winter festival, but that might be good because everybody might enjoy being there anyway. Well, it's time for me to get on out of here. It's been my pleasure to be with you as I am every weekday morning at 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. Stay tuned for Tech Today just up in a minute. Vincent Arnolino says, never say I should have. Man, you got so many different things to do during this winter season when the lights... of the sun goes down so early and you're still looking for something to entertain yourself. So go out and cheer on the folks who are putting together plays and musicals and winter festivals and make sure you're having a good time at all seasons. I'll be back again tomorrow morning. You've been listening to Good Morning Hunterdon on HuntonChamberRadio.com. Thanks for listening.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
USA Radio News with Ron Taylor.
Well, I know Hillary doesn't want to run against me, but I can't wait to run against her. She is everything that we don't need in America. We can't afford another 4 years like the last seven.
Florida Senator Marco Rubio telling Fox News Hannity he doesn't think Hillary Clinton would be good for the country at all. The Republican presidential candidate said in her emails they found plans of her trying to stir up Palestinian protests. He also says she lied to the families of the victims of Benghazi about what caused that attack. Another national title is in the books for Alabama. The Crimson Tide rolled past Clemson for a 45-40 victory on Monday in Arizona, capturing their fourth national championship since 2009. Heisman Trophy winner Derrick Henry ran for 158 yards and three touchdowns for Bama. Tributes continue to pour in for David Bowie, Paul McCartney, Mick Jagger, Kanye West, and Madonna, are among dozens honoring the iconic artist. Bowie died at his home in London Sunday after a private 18-month-long battle with cancer. You're listening to USA Radio News.
There are times being a genius would really come in handy.
As your financial advisor, I require a small 12% commission in addition to a 3% subcommission on every financial transaction and a 9% commissionary commission on top of the honorarium.
Honorarium?
It's like a commission.
But thankfully, you don't need to be a genius to do your own taxes. Because with TurboTax Absolute Zero, you can file your simple tax return for free. There are no hidden costs. It's simple, and it's absolutely free. Intuit TurboTax. Taxes done smarter. For simple U.S. returns only, offer may end without notice. See offer details at TurboTax.com. There are times being a genius would really come in handy.
As your financial advisor, I require a small 12% commission in addition to a 3% subcommission on every financial transaction and a 9% commissionary commission on top of the honorarium.
Honorarium?
It's like a commission.
But thankfully, you don't need to be a genius to do your own taxes. Because with TurboTax Absolute Zero, you can file your simple tax return for free. There are no hidden costs. It's simple, and it's absolutely free. Intuit TurboTax. Taxes done smarter. For simple U.S. returns only, offer may end without notice. See offer details at TurboTax.com.
Today marks the sixth anniversary of the deadly 7.0 magnitude earthquake that rocked Haiti in 2010. USA's Tammy Rose has a look back.
The initial trembler struck at 4:53 p.m. and was followed by several strong aftershocks. It was centered some 15 miles southwest of the Haitian capital, Port-au-Prince. Estimates of the death toll vary. Some sources say up to 316,000 people died. Another 300,000 people were hurt. 1.5 million people were initially displaced, and more than 60,000 people were still displaced at the end of March of 2015. I'm Tammy Rose.
President Obama delivers his final State of the Union address tonight. Obama is expected to push Congress to pass criminal justice reform and approve the massive Asia-Pacific trade deal. White House spokesman Josh Earnest says the president will make an optimistic case that betting on America is a good bet. You're listening to USA Radio News.
Ah, the beginning of a new year. Start it off right during Rite Aid's 2016 Starting Points. Because every week through January 23rd, you can ring in the values. With 1,000 Plenty Points worth $10 in savings when you spend $30 on participating products with your Wellness Plus with Plenty card. That adds up to big savings every week for the entire month. But only at Rite Aid. With us, it's personal. Worth at least $10. Limit 2 offers per card per week. Plenty is a rewards program. Terms and conditions apply. See plenty.com/terms for details.
With the Powerball jackpot reaching over $1.3 billion, Americans continue to flock to buy their tickets in hopes of picking the right numbers. But psychologist Dr. Frieda Birnbaum says there are actually several reasons to be thankful for not winning.
There are a lot of obligations. You have to consider the media, who's going to be all over you and find out more about you than you may want to talk about.
Dr. Frieda says lottery winners have added stress, with friends and family members wanting a portion of their winnings too. She also says after winning the jackpot, it would be difficult to tell if new people want to be your friend just because of your new money. The IRS will want to know all about the money and charities you're giving to, and they'll be investigating thoroughly. There'll also be a lot of new choices, like which charities to help, how much to give to family and friends, and even which presidential candidate to support. Dr. Frieda Birnbaum says since the current Powerball is so close to election time, winning would mean a lot of added stress from presidential candidates.
When you're out there in the media, they're going to be looking for your support. They're going to try to win you over. They may want to wine and dine you in some way, have you over for some kind of small meetings with other people who are big contributors.
Psychologist Dr. Frieda Birnbaum says another downfall of winning the jackpot is the possibility of developing a gambling addiction.
You always try to find ways of reasoning with yourself why you should go ahead and invest your money.
Powered by WesternJournalism.com, I'm Ron Taylor, and this is USA Radio News.
Lose 20 to 40 pounds in 40 days, guaranteed. Let me repeat, lose 20 to 40 pounds in 40 days, guaranteed. This is not a crazy diet or exercise program. No drugs, hormones, or shots. You can lose 20 to 45 pounds in 40 days with Nutrimos Resonant Frequency Technology to measure 2,800 of your body's key biomarkers. Using NRF, they can find and correct the cause of your weight problem by measuring factors affecting weight gain, including metabolism, fat burning, fat storage, appetite, detoxification, and hormonal regulation. It's safe, fast, easy, and effective, and you won't walk around hungry or have cravings. It's even doctor supervised. Schedule a body composition analysis and consultation. You can be transformed in 40 days guaranteed. This is a limited time offer, so they can't wait to see you look great.
So call 888-718-7077. That's 888-718-7077. Or visit njthin.com. That's njthin.com.
Good day and welcome to Tech Today on HunterChamberRadio.com. I'm your host, Chris Bianco. I am the principal of Blue Panther Business Partners. Blue Panther Business Partners offers practical advice, hands-on assistance to the business owner who never has time to improve his or her business. We do that by accomplishing your wish list. The mission of Tech Today is to demystify technologies so the consumers seeking solutions for personal or business use can be better informed when making purchasing decisions or hiring individuals to carry out those technological decisions. Each week, I will be focusing on topics about technology. Segments will include news, latest apps, buying advice for hardware and software, and answering your questions. To contact me during the show, go to Tech Today on Facebook. Email me at goodmorning@huntedandchamberradio.com. The phone number here in the studio, 908-237-0410. To contact me outside of the show, BluePantherBIZ.com. Second week of 2016, and the first week of 2016 has the Consumer Electronics Show that takes place in Las Vegas. So a lot of technology news has come out of the results of that show. Some really innovative, and some, what do you really got? So we kind of collect as much about that as we can, and we have lots to talk about. So let us find out what it is that we have in store. Some news right now, Spotify. Now, we have a lot of different music apps out there that people use, Pandora, Intune, Live 365. Spotify is one of them. And Spotify has been hit with a new $200 million copyright lawsuit. Came out on Saturday and says that streaming leader Spotify has been hit by a new copyright lawsuit seeking $200 million in the second such case within weeks. By the way, this is on Yahoo.com. The lawsuits, each filed by individual artists in a U.S. federal court in Los Angeles, ask a judge to create a class action suit in which other alleged victims can collectively seek damages. The latest lawsuit was filed on Friday by Melissa Ferrick, the Massachusetts-based indie folk singer who teaches at the prestigious Berklee School of Music and rose to prominence as Morrissey's last-minute opening act on his 1991 tour. Ferrick accused Spotify, which boasts of providing a massive selection of on-demand music, of failing to inform copyright owners when it created PhonoRecords, the files used to provide the instant music online. Ferrick charged that the Swedish company not wanting to delay its growth, including its U.S. launch in 2011, took a now-familiar strategy for many digital music services, infringe now, apologize later. Spotify chose expediency over licenses. Thus, while Spotify was profited handsomely from the music that it sells to its subscribers, the owners of that music, in particular songwriters and their music publishers, have not been able to share in that success because Spotify is using their music for free, the lawsuit said. Ferrick said that her songs have been streamed or temporarily downloaded 1 million times in the past 3 years over Spotify, but said the company did not license them as required. And Ferrick's lawsuit sought at least $200 million on behalf of copyright holders from Spotify, a private company which says it has more than 75 million users and has been valued at $8 billion. Spotify was hit in late December by another lawsuit seeking a class action suit filed by David Lowery, the leader of alternative rock bands Cracker and Camper Van Beethoven, who is also an academic. Lowery, whose lawsuits sought at least $150 million, also accused Spotify of failing to seek permission for copying or distributing songs. His lawsuit had a slightly different argument, accusing Spotify of ignoring mechanical rights, the permission to reproduce copyrighted material. In response to Lowery's lawsuit, Spotify said it was trying to compensate every rights holder, but that data was often missing. Wow. We are committed to paying songwriters and publishers every penny, Spotify spokesman Jonathan Prince said at the time. Spotify says it has paid back $3 billion in music makers, has set aside money for future payouts, and is working to find technical solutions to avoid future problems. Streaming both on Spotify and competing services such as Apple Music and Tidal has been rapidly growing and contributed to a net rise in music consumption in the United States last year. So that's an interesting perspective. Yeah, it looks like Spotify rushes to market. Of course, that's the perspective of the songwriters. Rushes to market with, quote-unquote, the intention of paying back these songwriters when they figure out how to actually pay them back. But Spotify doesn't want to lose market share or that revenue. And while it's collecting that revenue kind of ahead of the game, it's kind of bankrolling some of it, using obviously even much of it for investments, and then when it needs to, it will send the licensors to the necessary people. If everything was on the up and up, I don't think a lot of people would complain about it. But you know, there's always an angle and there's always a way to get past some things. And again, as they said, there's a tendency to do things and then apologize later. And it seems to have that same flavor to it. The world of copyright, especially with music, has been an enigma for decades, and it continues to just show up time after time in the regardless of which medium it's being provided in. So, very interesting. Another argument, another tussle in the news is the world of the NSA, National Security Agency. Juniper Networks will drop code tied to the National Security Agency, so says Joseph Men of Reuters. And he published this again on Saturday, last Saturday. Published in, again, news.yahoo.com, it says San Francisco's Juniper Networks said late on Friday it would stop using a piece of security code that analysts believe was developed by the National Security Agency in order to eavesdrop through technology products. The Silicon Valley maker of networking gear said it would ship new versions of security software in the first half of this year to replace those that rely on numbers generated by dual elliptic curve technology. The statement on a blog post came a day after presentation at a Stanford University conference of research by a team of cryptographers who found that Juniper's code had been changed in multiple ways during 2008 to enable eavesdropping on virtually private network sessions by customers. Last month, Sunnyside-based Juniper said it had found and replaced two unauthorized pieces of code that allowed backdoor access, which the researchers said had appeared in 2012 and 14. The 2014 backdoor was straightforward, said researcher Hovav Shakam of University of California, San Diego, allowing anyone with the right password to see everything. The 2012 code changed a mathematical constant in Juniper's NetScreen products that should have allowed its author to eavesdrop, according to Sesham and his fellow investigators. Juniper's initial patch had gotten rid of the constant in dual elliptic curve and replaced it with the version it had been using since 2008. By the way, that's 6 years ago. But the academics who studied the code said that while Juniper had not disavowed the 2008 code, it was not explained how the constant was picked up or why it was using the widely faulted dual elliptic curve at all. Still, another curve constant, quietly provided by the NSA and required by some federal certification, was exposed in documents leaked by former NSA contractor Edward Snowden as a key to the back door. Until now, most influential adopters of dual elliptic curve was believed to be RSA, part of storage company EMC, which Reuters reported received a $10 million federal contract to distribute it in software kit for others. Though the academic team looked at Juniper as not named a suspect in 2008, 2012, or 14 changes. 2008 was 1 year after veteran cryptographers raised questions about dual elliptic curve. A very advanced adversary could have seen how to manipulate dual elliptic curve and, in theory, managed to insert code through a cooperative or unsuspecting Juniper employee. But the company had not advertised the fact that it was using the formula at all. A more logical suspect, said expert Nicholas Weaver of the International Computer Science Institute, was the NSA, which might have been displaced later by other countries' agencies or top-level hackers in 2012 and 14. The NSA did not immediately respond to any emailed request for comment. Juniper said it was continuing to investigate and has a forum out there to talk about it. It declined to answer any questions from Reuters about the revisions. So, 6 years in the making, this software was out there. It was slipped in somehow, some way, pointing fingers. The fact is, Juniper has learned about it from Stanford. Stanford has pointed it out to Juniper. Juniper is now sending out code releases to replace it. So it's going out to these various networking gear, and if you have a Juniper network gear, you should probably investigate or have some discussion with Juniper about when you're going to receive that firmware update. For most of you, you don't even have that. You might have a router or something like that. Most of you probably don't even have a Juniper router or access point or modem, so it shouldn't be an issue. But it does give you insight into how many of these companies continue to have these relationships, business relationships, and a lot of people are not actually investigating the true detail of what's going on. That is very disappointing in this day and age. So we need to worry about that. We are at a 15-minute break. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with more of Tech Today in just a moment. Let Stowaway Self-Storage be your local moving and storage solution. With three great locations in Hunterdon County, Stowaway is conveniently located in Flemington, White House, and Lebanon. Stowaway Self-Storage offers sizes from 5x5 to 50x50, discounted packing supplies, and U-Haul rentals on site. Affordable monthly rentals for your personal and business use, let Stowaway help you park your car in the garage again or store those old records that you need to keep. Visit us at stowawayselfstorage.com and mention this ad to receive 50% off your first month's rent. Hey, this is Big C of Good Morning Hunterdon on HuntingChamberRadio.com. Like what you hear on Hunterdon Chamber Radio? Now you can take it with you. Download our Hunterdon Chamber Radio app from iTunes and Google Play Store now. Get schedules, station information, listen live, or to the latest podcasts. Everything in the palm of your hand or in your car during your commute. Get the HuntingChamberRadio.com app today.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their Chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the Chamber.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
You're listening to Tech Today on HuntingChamberRadio.com, where we talk about news apps, buying advice for hardware and software, and your questions. So let's continue into our 2016 delve into the world of technology. Well, one of the big things that are going on right now is, again, ISIS and how ISIS has... getting away into the world of technology, actually overcoming a lot of their own geographical barriers by using technology to reach other people. So the White House has said we got to tackle it a different way. So U.S. meets tech leaders, forms task force to fight online militants. And that's Reuters' Dustin Voles and Marie Salto reported this on Friday. Last Friday, and again, this is on news.yahoo.com, and it says that the Obama administration on Friday set its top national security officials to meet tech industry leaders in Silicon Valley and announced a new task force to counter online propaganda as the United States tries to crack down on the unprecedented use of the internet by jihadists. White House Chief of Staff Dennis McDonough led a high-level government delegation that held talks with representatives from some of the country's biggest technology companies, including Apple CEO Tim Cook. It was the latest effort by the Obama administration to cajole tech firms to be more cooperative with the intelligence community following a rift prompted by former National Security Agency contractor Edward Snowden's disclosures, which detailed government surveillance. The talks at a government complex next to San Jose City Hall were described by a senior administrator official as a technological brainstorming meeting to look at ways to make it harder for violent extremists to use the internet to recruit support or to plan attacks. Quote, "We explained our policies and how we enforce them. Facebook does not tolerate terrorists or terrorist propaganda, and we work aggressively to remove it as soon as we become aware of it," Facebook spokesperson said after the meeting, which lasted 2 hours and 15 minutes. Google, Twitter, Microsoft, Yahoo, and LinkedIn were also planning to send senior executives as President Barack Obama works to reassure the public that his administration is succeeding against Islamic State in the wake of recent attacks in Paris and San Bernardino, California. A 2015 Brookings Institution report found that Islamic State, which controls large areas of Syria and Iraq, had operated at least 46,000 Twitter accounts during a three-month period in 2014. Security was surprisingly light around the San Jose venue, and local media posted pictures on Twitter of Homeland Security Secretary Jay Johnson and McDonough walking down the street to get coffee ahead of the meeting. Encrypted communications. Several social media companies have updated their terms of service within the last 18 months to take tougher stance against content that can incite violence, but some are reluctant to appear too cooperative with the government because of the privacy and commercial concerns. Twitter, long maligned for being less cooperative than other companies such as Facebook, updated its policies last week to explicitly prohibit hateful conduct. Law enforcement struggles to crack encrypted electronic communications used by criminals and terrorist suspects was also on the agenda, but was not expected to be a central focus, sources say. So just to make a differentiation here, the you know, the Facebook posts, the Twitter feeds, that's all text-based. And there's nothing that's encrypted about it. You can see it inside and outside the servers that provide it. But to communicate within the Islamic State from one member to another, encrypted electronic communications, that's where the particular message text is rearranged in a certain formula that is then snapped back with that same formula reversed when the person who wants to read it, the intended recipient, receives it. And so there's no way to actually view the text while it's in transit or while it's made a subway stop at a particular server as it's being passed along. So law enforcement has always wanted to have a way to encrypt or decrypt that electronic message, but that kind of goes against the grain of why it's encrypted in the first place. And so that's the dilemma. Those that want it decrypted to weed out the destructive individuals, the terrorists, it's hard to differentiate them from the normal citizen and their private conversations, which law enforcement shouldn't have any access to. How do you make a difference? You can't. And so that's the real tie here. That's the real problem. Intelligence officials and some lawmakers have complained that the growing prevalence of strong encryption on email, call, and messaging platforms such as Message, iMessage, and WhatsApp hamstring their ability to monitor communications between criminal suspects. That's kind of the point. The Obama administration abandoned a push last year for legislation that would force U.S. companies to build a so-called backdoor into their products to allow investigators access to the encrypted data, amid concerns from technologists and privacy advocates. The meeting was not expected to prompt a change in the White House's official stance. Attorney General Loretta Lynch and FBI Director James Corney had also, senior officials also attended that San Jose talks. As part of the online efforts against jihadists, a new group known as the Countering Violent Extreme Task Force will integrate and harmonize government efforts to prevent violent extremism in the United States, while White House National Security Spokesman Ned Prince said. Some of the changes appear largely bureaucratic, however, and reflect the government's ongoing struggles to address the Islamic State's presence online. The task force will involve the Department of Homeland Security and the Department of Justice, other federal and local agencies. In addition, the State Department said it is revamping how it delivers anti-propaganda on sites like Twitter with the formation of the new Global Enhancement Center. It will shift away from a heavily criticized campaign that included producing English counter-propaganda tech content and toward assisting allies in creating more targeted and anti-militant communications. So we'll see what's going to happen. It's just a beginning dialogue and a kind of a town hall to kind of repair relationships as the government overstepped its bounds. And that's exactly the concern that the technology companies have, is that if you ever have such a thing as a quote-unquote backdoor, even if the best of intentions are there, there's always a way for the government to somehow cajole or pressure or even blackmail the technology companies to open that backdoor, even when they shouldn't. And that's when that snooping comes on. And that's what happened with the NSA, and that's the reason Edward Snowden had to make a stand. That's the problem. And you can't have, if you don't have the door, you can't have the pressure to open it. And that's what the technology companies are forcing or trying to rail against. Those technology companies are still in the news, and this is for a good reason. It happens to be with the driverless cars. Crash rates for self-driving cars are less than conventional cars, so says a study. According to NewsYahoo.com, Reuters' David Shepherdson posted this on Friday. And he says, self-driving cars are involved in fewer crashes on average than vehicles with a driver behind the wheel, a study released on Friday by the Virginia Tech Transportation Institute showed. The study was commissioned by Alphabet Inc.'s Google unit, which has reported a series of minor crashes involving its self-driving fleet. It looked only at Google's fleet of more than 50 self-driving cars, which was logged at 1.3 million miles in Texas and California in self-driving mode. The test fleet has reported 17 crashes over the last 6 years, although none were the fault of the self-driving car, Google said. After adjusting for severity and accounting for crashes not reported to police. The study estimated cars with drivers behind the wheel are involved in 4.2 crashes per million miles versus 3.2 crashes per million miles for self-driving cars in autonomous mode. Crash rates for conventional vehicles at all severity levels were higher than self-driving crash rates, the study found. A 2015 National Highway Traffic Safety Administrative study found that 60% of property damage only crashes and 24% of all injury crashes are not reported to the police. California law requires all crashes involving self-driving vehicles be reported to the police. Google spokesman Johnny Liu said the company asked Virginia Tech to look onto the topic given the interest and develop a robust methodology to be able to make meaningful comparisons between regular cars on the road as well as our self-driving cars. Liu said the study will be helpful making apples-to-apples comparisons moving forward. A study released in October by the University of Michigan Transportation Research Institute compared crash rates among Google, Delphi, and Audi self-driving cars in 2013 and found that they had a higher rate than for conventional cars. But that study noted the low volume of driverless miles, 1.2 million compared with 3 trillion miles driven annually on U.S. roads. In December, California proposed state regulations that would require all autonomous cars to have a steering wheel, throttle, and brake pedals when operating on California public roads. A licensed driver would need to be in the driver's seat, ready to take over in the event something went wrong. Google, eager to demonstrate its vehicles are safe, criticized the proposed rule, which it said would maintain the same old status quo and fall short on allowing this technology to reach its full potential, while excluding those who need to get around but cannot drive. All right, so there you have it. We're trying to get some real facts, and sounds like the reports right now are in conflict. So don't know how it's all going to shake out at this particular point. More driverless car information in the news, again in news.yahoo.com. Reuters reports that Apple registers automobile domain names, including apple.car. Now, what would apple.car have to do with it? Apple Inc. has registered domain names related to automobiles, adding to speculation about the company's plans to develop an automobile. The iPhone maker registered the domain names, which include apple.car, apple.cars, and apple.auto in December, according to domain information provider Whois. MacRumors had first reported the news on Friday, but said that domain names would be related to Apple's CarPlay, which lets drivers access contacts on their iPhones, make calls, or listen to voicemails without taking their hands off the steering wheel. While never openly acknowledging plans to build a car, Apple has been aggressive in recruiting auto experts from companies such as Ford and Mercedes-Benz. Car technology has become a prime area of interest for Silicon Valley companies, including Google, which has built a prototype of self-driving car. So we'll see more insight into the world of Apple and what they're trying to achieve. And who knows, it may or may not be in the world of self-driving cars or even just cars in general. You never know. We were talking about the White House, and the White House is joining with Genius to annotate history. So it's time to start maybe getting out of the paper history books and moving into electronic. So Sissy Lipowski on 1/9 on January 9th reported this on Wired.com and says that President Obama still has a year left in his presidency, but it seems members of his administration, past and present, already are getting a bit nostalgic. In honor of the president's final State of the Union address on Tuesday, the White House has asked President Obama's former staffers to add context to past speeches using the online annotation platform Genius. The notes on the White House website now feature anecdotes such as what it was like for John Favreau to stare down a blank computer screen before writing the president's first State of the Union address. While the contributions will be heavily curated, members of the public are encouraging to add annotations as well. the goal of the unusual partnership, says White House Digital Secretary Jason Goldman, is to meet people where they are. Americans generally have a broad media diet, Goldman says. We thought of Genius as an ideal platform to add additional color and additional content to the State of the Union from previous years. Twitter, this is the first time that White House has used Genius, but it's far from the first time the Obama administration has used digital platforms like Genius to spread its message. Regardless of how you feel about the president's politics, there's no doubt his campaigns and his presidency have forever changed how politicians and their teams are expected to communicate with the public. Back in 2008, the fact that the Obama campaigned on Twitter seemed revolutionary. Today, it's table stakes. Further, his time in office, campaigns have adopted Obama's digital strategy as a model. The more the public comes to expect that model, the harder his team has to work to find new and surprising outlets to share the administration's message. In the process, Obama administration has radically changed the art of political spin. Obama has hosted Instagram takeovers to discuss climate change. On Funny or Die episode of Between Two Ferns with Zach Galifianakis, he pumped healthcare.gov. In 2012, he hosted an Ask Me Anything session on Reddit, where he laid out his thoughts on college affordability, super PACs, and internet freedom. And just a few weeks ago, he rode with Jerry Seinfeld for an episode of Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee, talking about, well, nothing. Not all of these efforts to try something new work. Maybe remind you of the Iran deal Twitter handle, its ill-advised attempt to co-opt it straight out of Compton Meme. Still, whether we're cringing or nodding along, as far as the administration is concerned, at least we're paying attention. When these tactics are working at their best, we forget altogether we're being spoon-fed a stump speech. According to Goldman, this year's State of the Union will differ from years past because the president will not be focusing on specific policy proposals for the next year, but on major issues the country will face in the future. We thought that looking back and taking a closer look at the previous 7 years' speeches will be a great context for setting up the speech this year, he says. So there you have it. The Obama administration definitely has brought us into the 21st century, or at least close to it, with regard to how the president and the White House engages us in technology, information, and social media. But you still have to realize that there is a marketing spin to it with regard to how he and the administration wants to promote their particular agendas. All right, we're going to take another quick break, and we'll be back with more of Tech Today in just a moment. You're listening to Tech Today on HuntingChamber.com.
The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce is proud to present HunterdonChamberRadio.com. All business, all talk, all community. Bringing you local news, information, events, and informative programming. Proudly serving the businesses and residents of Hunterdon County, New Jersey.
Second week of January, and by now your New Year's resolutions are starting to fade. And for those of you who thought you were going to do some type of exercise or lose weight or somehow do something that was going to be physically active, let's see if we can resurrect that for you. Life hacker Melanie Pinoli on Saturday wrote an article that says, Do Yoga With Me streams hundreds of yoga videos for free. So if you are interested in somehow, some way doing yoga, you have it right here. Ready to build your strength, flexibility, and balance with yoga? You'll find yoga videos scattered across the web, but one site you might want to bookmark is Do Yoga With Me. The site offers videos for all levels and a wide variety of yoga styles and needs, including yoga at work, prenatal yoga, and power yoga. You can browse by difficulty, video length, style, specific teacher, and most of the videos are over 20 minutes long, but there are some shorter ones available as well. Some of the videos require a membership, which you can get either as a $5 monthly subscription or a one-time donation in the amount of your choosing. The site runs on donations. You can also buy any video in three formats: large screen for $9, mobile for $6, or audio for $3. All in all, an excellent resource for beginners and advanced yogis alike. So there you have it. You have the opportunity now to put away that excuse, and for $5, get the ability to do some yoga with a video. Do it right in your house. If you're interested in improving your career or moving into a new career having to do with technology, if you want a high-paying job as a back-end developer, now is your chance to learn Python and PHP for cheap. This is in Business Insider, and it says, for those considering a career in web development, it's important to figure out whether you want to work in front-end or back-end development. They're both lucrative paths, but very different paths at that. Front-end development focuses on what a user will see and interact with while visiting a website, the design and layout of the page and the links they can click on. Conversely, back-end development deals with the metamorphical nuts and bolts of the coding operation, all of the aspects of a website that make it run but are invisible to the user. Understanding the distinction between front-end and back-end of a website is important to deciding which programming language is to learn first. While there are competing theories on what language beginners should start with, there is no clear consensus, and the best thing that you can do is choose whichever one lines up closest with what your goals in development are. If you think that your interests will be more in the back-end development than front-end, Udemy is currently offering two classes that will start you on your way. The Complete Python Bootcamp and PHP for Beginners, become a PHP Master and Make Money Fast. Both of those classes are aimed at brand new coders, but each covers a different back-end language, Python and PHP respectively. Python is a popular choice for beginners because it is regularly cited as being relatively easy to pick up, relatively being the key word here, and has a different active community of developers. Or, if you have any questions, chances are you can ask around and find your answers. PHP, while also a back-end language, is a little different in that the language is a bit less readable, and many of the most popular web frameworks, including WordPress and Drupal, are built with it. If you've been waiting to learn or code and think you want to be involved in back-end development, do your due diligence and find the right language for you. If you come to the conclusion that Python or PHP is the first language you want to tackle, these Udemy classes are a good place to start. Now through January 11th, they're available for just $10 each. Both courses have over 9,000 students and an average rating of 4.9 out of 5 stars. So they're both there. Now, let me just say this. The way to get a real insight into being a coder is to first understand the logic based on it. So there are some tests out there that will ask you that you could try to try and get an insight into logic that you need to see patterns. They're out there, and there used to be one that was given by IBM to those people who actually wanted to go into certain coding schools. I suggest you try that. Number two, you have to understand that coding languages are very similar to foreign languages. The first one is going to be completely foreign to you. And I would strongly suggest that you back up and maybe look at some of the one-hour code websites to see if you can get an insight into the coding process. That might be the first thing to do. The second language is going to be a little bit more difficult because you're going to be using it based on whatever first language you've learned. And then when you finally learn your third language, that is when you're going to start to think in terms of language concepts instead of the actual language syntax. And until you've actually done wrote and worked in certain programming languages, you will not understand what that means. But essentially, when you're first learning a language, you focus on the words and not necessarily the coding concepts, the structures. There are looping structures, conditional structures, and there are variables, and then there's subroutines and functions. These exist in all the different coding languages. But most of the time, people are focused on the actual words, where it says if or start, and you keep worrying about the words, and as it turns out, the words are going to be different in every language, but the structures are always going to be the same. So you're not going to realize that until you actually get through three languages, and then you'll start to see how the structures are separated from the words. So it's a little bit of a long process, but the way to start is to actually just start in one place and learn a language and start coding in something. You'll need to get some type of a book or follow along in some type of a class to actually build a project. Without going through the process of actually building some type of project or app and going through the mental gymnastics of what you need and how to build it, you're not really learning much. So look for that as part of your options when you are actually looking for a way to learn coding languages. We move on to commuters. New York City is home and a place for many people every day when they're commuting to work and back from work. And one of the things that everybody complains about in the subway is that you lose your connections. You lose your Wi-Fi connectivity. And a lot of times you can do some work or even figure out your next part of your destination. And if you don't have Wi-Fi, you certainly don't have a 4G LTE signal. So you're stuck. Well, New York City's whole subway system will be getting Wi-Fi in 2016. So says Engadget.com. John Fingus is telling us that, and he told us that on Saturday. And he says, forget having to remember which New York City subway stations have Wi-Fi. By the end of the year, you won't have to pick and choose. State Governor Andrew Cuomo has promised that every underground station will get Wi-Fi by the end of the year, guaranteeing at least some kind of internet access while you're waiting for your train. Complete cellular service will come slightly later, with end-to-end access ready for early 2017. Either is heartening news if you regularly commute underground, since Transit Wireless, which is handling the service, had previously targeted late 2017 for full Wi-Fi service. There should be more in the works, too. Cuomo has proposed a contactless payment system, which would allow you to use your smartphone for newer bank cards to pay your fare, rather than busting out your Metro card or some tickets. The current proposed phone system looks a bit clunky with its QR-based scanning, but New York City buses and subways won't get that feature until 2018. Hopefully, it'll include NFC-based payments such as Apple Pay or Android Pay, or by then. Both the Long Island Railroad and Metro North Railroad will have mobile ticketing within a half a year. And yes, the city plans to drag trains and buses into the modern era. You'll get real-time arrival data for all subway lines and more countdown clocks. Also, subway cars will start getting USB charging ports this year. 400 will have them by next year, and every new bus delivered from this year forward will have Wi-Fi hotspots. In short, New York City's mass transit system will soon revolve around mobile. While there will still be gaps in coverage, most notably when you're in the middle of some tunnels, they may soon become the exception rather than the rule. That's enlightening, because most of the time people are trying to figure out, especially the complexity of New York City and how to get where they need to go, and you're sitting there on the subway with that idle time trying to figure out where your next stop is, or figuring out how you're going to connect to the next train or next bus, or how you're going to walk to whatever you're going to walk to after you get off the bus, and you have no access whatsoever. And then you even have no way of contacting an individual or a friend to even get that information. So you're completely lost. And nobody in the subway systems feels compelled to ask a stranger. And so you're looking for usually some type of MTA official or a patrolman to give you some insight. And those are hard to find. So very enjoyable, enlightening to know that Andrew Cuomo is going to do that. He's also proposed a huge upgrade to Penn Station, New York. So they're working on that as well. So there's a lot of great things happening in the world of transportation that are going to be affecting mobile users in the very near future. We continue with information about Windows. ZDNet says, if you're still running Windows 8, time to upgrade or else. Yeah, it's been a while already. Windows 8 is only 3 years old, so with Microsoft's 10-year support policy, one might assume it's eligible for security updates for many years. But thanks to a quirk in that support lifecycle, the clock runs out in a matter of days. If you're still running Windows 8, it's time to upgrade. Microsoft's support cycle for every Windows version is a generous 10 years from the date it was launched. That means even though those with clinging to Windows Vista will count on more than a year of security updates until April 11, 2017, and anyone running Windows 7 can do so with confidence until January 14, 2020. So Windows 8, which was released in October of 2012, should be supported until the next decade. Nope. Thanks to a quirk in the support lifecycle, Windows 8 users are about to be cut off from security updates. When the first patch Tuesday of 2016 rolls around on January 12th, it will represent the last batch of updates for Windows 8. If you're still running Windows 8, it's still time to upgrade to Windows 8.1 or Windows 10 or risk exposing your PC to unpatched security risks. The reason for this odd state of affairs is that Microsoft is treating Windows 8.1 as a service pack to Windows 8. The rules allow you to hold off on installing that service pack, but only for 2 years. There's the formal policy, which has been stitched together in this article. The good news is that upgrading to Windows 8.1 pushes the deadline out significantly. Windows 8.1 reaches the end of its extended support phase on January 10th, 2023, and there won't be any additional service packs to complicate that deadline. Upgrading to Windows 10 extends the life cycle even further to 2025. Windows 8 might seem like a historical footnote at this point. However, as of the end of December 2015, three analytics sources tracked calculated percentages of PCs running Windows 8, not including 8.1, at between 2 and 3% of the total installed base of desktop and laptop PCs and Macs. That small percentage, a very large number, about 1.5 billion by most estimates, still adds up to about 30 to 40 million PCs are running Windows 8. The upgrade from 8 to 8.1 is unlikely any other Windows upgrade. It requires a trip to the Windows Store rather than the normal Windows Update route. The update is free for almost all. One exception, any enterprise with a Windows 8 volume license that doesn't include software assurance has to pay extra. So you might look into upgrading to Windows 10. I don't know what exactly is holding you back, but quite honestly, Windows 8 is just as antiquated as Windows 7. And Windows 10 has been proven to be fairly, I would say for the most majority, error-free. There are some quirks, and you have to work through them. So you really should look into that final upgrade to Windows 10. All right, we're going to take another quick break, and we'll be back with more of Tech Today on HuntingChipper.com in just a moment.
Hi, I'm Joe Peters of Weichert Realtors. Buying or selling a property can be one of the most expensive undertakings you face in your lifetime, and selecting the right realtor to help you through this process can dramatically affect your success or your failure. I have personally helped hundreds of buyers and sellers through this process in achieving their dreams and goals in 100 in Somerset County areas over the past 10 years. I believe that this experience should be a smooth, seamless one for you and not a roller coaster ride. But the best judgment as to whether or not I deliver this to my customers is their reactions in their own words.
One of the things we liked about Joe was that he would return calls within minutes if he wasn't able to pick up.
You know, Joe guided us through the process of selling our home and made a complicated transaction appear seamless.
How do I accomplish this? By approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, I try to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them my own. Then, I go out and take the mass amounts of data that we have and distill them down to a few understandable action points to be considered. Finally, I control the entire process through technologies to ensure that we're not going to hit any speed bumps along the way. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience.